Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, March 10th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the show, we welcome back legendary bassist Tony Levin, who is here to discuss his new book, Images from a Life on the Road. And he'll also answer your music questions. But this book is a delight. If you're a fan of rock or music in general, the insights you'll get and the joy you'll get from looking at this book, it's really quite something. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, if you want to talk to Tony Levin, 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But the number is 800-348-2551. Tony Levin, Images from a Life on the Road, coming up after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today, we welcome Tony Levin back to the program. Tony, you know from his work with Peter Gabriel, King Crimson, David Bowie, John Lennon. The list is really long. He is a great musician and a great photographer as well. And he's been taking photographs on the road for a long time. And his new book is Images from a Life on the Road. It takes a look back at many of the places and faces he has seen in all these decades touring. And if you have a question for Tony Levin, call us now, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number, if you have a question for Tony Levin, now is the time, 800-348-2551. Tony Levin, welcome back. How are you doing, sir?
I'm very well, Ray. Thanks for having me. Great to be back. I wish I was physically back there. That would be fun, too.
That would be fun to have anybody back here. I'll tell you, it's been such a strange year. And for a guy like you, who I imagine for the last 40-plus years, you have spent a fair number of months, weeks, months, whatever, on the road, this has to have been a weird one.
It's a weird one. It's an adjustment. My wife has never seen this much of me, or nor have the dogs. It's not just me. All of us road guys who love playing live and tour all the time, suddenly are confronted with, right now it's about a year at home, which is pretty amazing, pretty different.
Now, I mean, you, I assume, have a nice home studio, and you have been doing recording and session work throughout, right?
You're exactly right. I'm very lucky. I don't complain because I have my music. I don't have what I love to do, which is playing live and sharing the music with people. But yes, I have my music, so no complaints here.
Well, the book is fantastic, and people who know me, they know me as something of a grumbler at times around here. And the book makes me smile for many reasons, which we will get into here. But when did you start taking photographs?
I think like everybody, I took a bit when I was a teen. And I suppose in my 20s, when I was started going on the road, I took them kind of casually. And gradually, as will happen, I got a little better at it, I hope, through the years. This book has... As my book, my pictures, my photos, pretty much since the 70s. For those who haven't seen me, I'm a little bit on the older side. I've been touring pretty much since the earth cooled. So I had a great amount of material to wade through to try and picture, to choose which pictures to use for the book.
I remember that earth cooling tour. It was outstanding. Man, it was really, you know, one of the early pictures in there, I think 77, is Jerry Murata, and you guys are in a little car, or you're taking the picture outside of the car, and you're waiting on this little country road in England for cows to get out of the way. How long did that take?
Yeah, that was in the 70s when we first started touring with Peter Gabriel, and the town was Bath, England, where Peter had a studio, really kind of a farm. And it had that strange half a car laying in the back, and things happened like going to a gig in Bath. We would be held up by cows crossing the road.
Very funny. Tony Levin joins us today. If you'd like to ask Tony a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551. The new book is Images from a Life on the Road, and it's chock full of great photographs. I mean, you know, I don't recall, I went to see the Gabriel show at SPAC in 83. And we'll talk about the Lay Your Hands on Me in a moment. But I don't recall you taking photographs that early on stage. Did you do that, or was that a King Crimson thing?
Absolutely, I was doing it. I know because I have the photos. And the thing you're particularly talking about, in the early 80s, Peter Gabriel started doing what's now called crowd surfing. There was no name for it, and it was just a very wild Peter thing that he would turn his back to the audience and fall back into the audience. Pretty strange. The first time he did it, Peter has the kind of audience that kind of communicates to themselves, especially in the old days. Many of the same people would follow a tour around and come to all the shows. So by the second time he did it, they knew, and they were up front with their arms raised, kind of wishing for him to offer himself to the audience, which is what the song Lay Your Hands on Me is about. So it was pretty special, pretty dynamic. And like all of the book, I feel how lucky I was to not only be playing with the music at that time, but to be there with a vantage point of what it looked like from the stage, because that's kind of unique, and how great to finally, after all these years, be able to share these photos with the public.
You know, it's so funny, though. I mean, you played an open string and just vamped and took the photo. How did you do that while he was out of the crowd?
Yeah. Well, as in all of these pictures through the years, if there are ones while I was playing, I can either play with one hand, which is not that hard to do. In that case, we were also singing. I could just pick up the camera and take a picture with one hand and play with my left hand. Peter he never loved that I was doing that, but he kind of tolerated it. In later years, when we had a stage in the round and he was riding around it in a bicycle during one piece, he just happened to knock my camera off the tripod every night. And I would kind of reach out and protect it from him. So we had that passive aggressive joking around with each other thing of, he would rather I didn't do it, but he tolerated it. And now I'm thrilled to have these pictures through the years.
And some of the pictures, I mean, you break it up in such an interesting way. And you break it up in travel at the venue, a look around backstage, going on, showtime, bows, and then a section on the players. And the coda is maybe my favorite part. But really what my favorite part is, and this is what gives me insight into what you do, is the index. And I could spend the rest of the day talking about this index, because I got thinking about what you do. And when we, like, for instance, I'm a kid, I go to the 1983 Peter Gabriel show at SPAC. I'm a kid. I'm there to be entertained. It is joyous for me. But for you, there is joy, certainly, and you see it in this book. There's also a lot of work. There's a lot of drudgery, and there's a lot of, you know, like you're going to your job. You're doing your thing. And it's interesting from a fan standpoint to get that insight.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you've seen the book so you can talk about it from the way it is, because what a challenge this is, being on the radio and trying to describe a fine art book with photos when you can't show the photos. This is even more challenging than describing your music when you can't play your music. So I appreciate that you've seen it, and I'm glad you like it. I had, of course, the year pretty much free at home to undertake the big job of collating all the tens of thousands of negatives I had and transparencies. And then when I had maybe the best 1,000 pictures, I had some work to do to kind of decide how to arrange the book. I considered making it chronological or making it by band, having a King Crimson section and many Levin Brothers and Stickmen and King Crimson, Peter Gabriel section. I ended up feeling that there was the potential to give the reader the sense of what it's like being on the road. So as you said, I started with chapter of traveling, of pictures, interesting ones, compelling pictures, but of us traveling in various different ways to get to the venue, and then photos of venues backstage and things like that. So really it's not about one band or two or five bands, actually quite a few bands in it, but it is a hopefully, if I succeeded, it's a vibrant visit to what it's like on the road with bands.
Without alienating anyone, and I have my theories from looking at the pictures, who's the most fun to tour with out of all those in your book?
Well, I kind of don't go there. I'll tell you what, Peter, off the top of my head, of course, Peter Gabriel is great fun to play with to perform with, because there's not just the music. The music is fun, a lot of it, but also as a performer or a stage designer, he always comes up with bizarre ideas and unusual ways. Anyone who's seen him knows what I mean. I don't really need to describe it. So that's fun to be taken out of your comfort zone and be dancing and twirling and running and to different stages and stuff like that is certainly fun. However, to overall your question of which is the most fun, I'm not good at picking favorites about anything.
Right.
I'm kind of open to a lot of things I like. And in King Crimson, a somber show to watch. There's not a lot of joking around in the show, but we have a great amount of fun on the road. So I'm not understating that to say that Peter Gabriel's a lot of fun.
You know, it's funny you bring up King Crimson, because you and I have joked about this on past shows, and I've said, you know,
sure.
I think I saw Fripp smile in this show. But in your photos, it shows you just how much you, there must have been a lot of laughs there as well at times, although those early shows, 81, let's say, when you had Crimson had reformulated and you were in there and Blue was in there. There's those clubs in England, man. They're just coming out of the punk scene or still in the punk scene.
It was an
interesting time. It must have been an interesting time to be playing that music.
Yes, it was challenging music, but the places we were in were gritty, shall I say?
Yeah.
I think, where was it in Albany? We would play Valentine's.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know it well. Yes.
So that's a good description of it. That's the kind of places we played, which is fine. We're playing our music, challenging music for the audience. And we had Adrian Belew, our wonderful lead singer, who joked around a little bit, sort of a fantastic, serious musician, but also what's the word? Help me. You know, a lot of fun on stage.
Yeah.
Having fun and bouncing around.
Full
while
of
Robert Fripp is famous for being very serious and sitting on a stool and not moving around. And me, I'm somewhere in the middle. So it had a lot of dynamic to the band. By the way, Bill Bruford, our fantastic drummer, you could tell by watching him play what fun he was having. However, the book features him having fun, but before the same show, him in a really dreary backstage dark room with graffiti all over to practicing the drums, which is really a large part of our day. We're backstage and nothing to do but practice.
And there were a lot of shots in this great new book of guys just sitting there with the drum pads or Fripp, as he was wont to do and still is, I'm sure, just sitting with his foot on the riser and practicing his scales. Hey, we'll take a quick break. Tony Levin is here, and the new book is Images from a Life on the Road. We'll be right back to take your calls, 800-348-2551. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Tony Levin is with us today. The new book of photographs is Images from a Life on the Road. It is a delight for anybody who has gone to a rock and roll show over the years, and I've been to my share. Another guy who's been to his share is Rick Orlando, who writes in, "Great to hear your voice, Tony. First off, I want to send some love to the loss of Joey Beesmer. Secondly, I want to pick up your book and thank you. Most of all, I want to tell you the first time I saw you live was with Crimson back at Toad's Place, isn't it, in New Haven? It wasn't Todd's
Place. Toad's, for sure.
Yeah.
Toad's Place.
On the Discipline show, tour. That show changed my life. I bet you didn't know that. Take care of yourself, Rick Orlando in Woodstock." So there you go.
Well, that's very nice. Rick is no slouch as a guitarist his own self. And he should have sat in with King Crimson. That would have been interesting.
Yeah, well, would Fripp have tolerated? Well, maybe if...
No. No, we wouldn't.
Maybe Rick would have brought some sauce or something. And maybe
he could have worked his way in with some string beans, for sure.
Yeah, right.
You know what? I forgot to mention where to get the book. Can I just mention
that? Absolutely. Because I'm
capable of doing a whole hour of talking about it and not mention, because it's not in stores. It's self-published. So TonyLevin.com has the link to where it can be bought online.
TonyLevin.com, and we will mention that throughout the program. And your website's fun, too. I mean, whenever you were on tour, back in the days when musicians actually toured, you would take many fine photographs and put them on. This one's from Wayne. Wayne also sends condolences with the loss of Joe Beesmer.
Joe Beesmer, sure. And very sad loss.
You know, before we get to the calls, and the number is 800-348-2551, I mentioned the index of your book, which is really an education for all of us. And there is a story that you please can just expound on for a moment about Peter Gabriel's alternative agent tour, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, it is an index. By the about collating the book and deciding I could have made it a book with a lot of stories and a few photos.
Yeah.
But I decided to hold back on the stories. But once I started indexing all of the photos, it grew until I named it, frankly, Index with Elaborations. And the index has stories about the thing. So we were touring. The incarnation of Peter Gabriel Band that had my Woodstock buddy, Jerry Marotta, in it. And Peter got in the habit of changing hotels at the last minute, even though his managers had booked them the way they wanted. And we started calling him the alternative travel agent. Me and Jerry started calling him that. And I think it was one week we had a stand in San Francisco at a club. San Francisco at that time was too expensive even for Peter Gabriel Band to stay in the city. So they booked us somewhere outside. And as we were checking into the hotel, we saw Peter in a phone booth turning into the alternative travel agent. And he found a hotel, an interesting one on the coast nearby on the map. It was nearby. The map did not show. It turned out only Jerry and I went with Peter. The rest of the band stayed at the original hotel. And it turned out there was a mountain range in between San Francisco and that hotel. So what looked like a 20-minute drive was a couple hours. And the state park was, it was at a state park. It was off season and it was freezing cold at the beach. So we didn't use the beach. And then every night when we would go to the gig, we would tell the others how great the hotel was and how great the beach was and how great the drive was. And then the next night there were two more guys with us. And it was a horrible, it was the kind of motel that has a stand-up tin shower with sand on the floor to wash the sand off your feet.
Right. Norman Bates was the manager, right?
Exactly. So by the end, we had everyone staying with us but the managers, who we never told the truth that it was a really bad idea, that hotel.
Tony Levin is our guest. The new book is Images from a Life on the Road, and the website is tonylevin.com. We'll get to the phones in just a minute. I promise you, Brian in Tannersville, you're first. Just two quick other photographs I wanted to discuss with you. The lack of emotion, or I don't know whether, I'm not sure what the emotion is, with Brian Ferry and Robert Fripp just waiting for the boat is a mm-hmm. classic shot. And that goes back to what, the early 80s?
Yes, early 80s when Brian's band and King Crimson toured together, and we were traveling in a bus and one of those typical forlorn situations where a 4-hour travel day turns into a 14-hour travel day. We were in the south of south of Portugal, and the plan was to cross on a ferry over into Spain and then drive up to Barcelona. And the tide was wrong and the ferry didn't arrive. So we then had to change plans and drive all the way back up to the north of Portugal and then fly to Barcelona. Nice. And I think you can capture most of that on the people. You can see that on their faces. It's that that feeling of there are things you could be doing and there are great things, but you're stuck for many, many hours doing what we are doing.
A picture really does capture a lot in that one. Many, many words. And the other photo, and I just want to bring it up briefly, Bruford standing on his head, Fripp looking at him in an odd way, and I don't know what year this was, but it must have been pretty early in that incarnation of Crimson.
That was 81. I remember that because it was bizarre. Yep, Bill sometimes did that. So I guess yoga. I never asked him why. And one evening, I think in Pittsburgh before the show, I saw Robert practicing, regardless of the fact that Bill was right in front of him, standing on his head. And next to them was a giant cutout of the Discipline album that we had done in 1981. I don't know why. I'm guessing that the record label at that time must have shown up with a promotion, because we don't carry around a 5-foot-tall copy of the album just to have in our dressing room.
Wow, it's a great shot. Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Tony Levin is joining us today. Images from a Life on the Road is the new book. And Brian in Tannersville, you've been waiting a long time. Go ahead, Brian.
Tony, I had the pleasure of meeting you over at Bearsville. You were doing, I guess you were showing your support for your friend Jerry Marotta there when he was doing a security project. It was a pleasure to meet you. Love your photograph. I gotta say that. It's just so much history to look back at. And one question I had for you, you did a project with Basio and Stevens And I remember reading something that Bosio reached out to Dale Zappa, and that's how the whole thing came together. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for the question, and thanks for reconnecting me to how we met. That's very nice of you. That project, it was called Bosio 11 Steves with Terry Bosio. Steve Stevens, wonderful guitar player. Terry Bosio, very famous and wonderful drummer, and myself. And like many, I call them projects. When a band is put together, it's not really quite a band, but hey, let's have three guys who know each other and like each other, and let's make an album and see what happens. So it was that kind of thing. And I have mixed feelings about that. I like those projects, and they're certainly challenging, and wild things can happen. But if it's really good, you want it to, part of me wants it to become a band. You want the music to have the chance to grow the way the music deserves to, which means going on the road. And that type of project is very hard to get to go on the road. Because the members are each in another band, which they owe their obligations to. So it takes kind of the stars need to be aligned for everybody to be off the road at the same time in the same season. So that's indeed the case with the two albums we made with that band. It was actually the idea of the record label. They had the idea of putting us together. We knew each other a little bit. I had worked on an album with Steve Stevens, but not in person, so I hadn't actually met him. They threw us together to write, and as many other bands that I've done, or projects that I've done, you need to write it and record it fairly quickly in a couple of weeks, and that ended up kind of doable because Steve Stevens has so much material at his fingertips. So I really liked the material we did. Overall, very happy with the two albums, and a little tinge of disappointment that we never got to tour and see where that music would go if it was played live every night.
Brian, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. I imagine that you are a fairly old hand at recording at home to a high level. Do you find that some musicians of that A caliber that you circulate in are not so much for recording at home, and they got to be in the studio?
I love the compliments are flying. Thank you, Ray. Right, the A-level character.
I don't know. I'm
lucky to play with a lot of musicians, and all of them good. I think most people now, it's a giant question. Actually, I'll have to kind of filter through my memory, but I know very few musicians who aren't comfortable with recording that way remotely. There are very few who want to do it that way. We would rather be, myself included, we'd rather be together in the same place. And it isn't, I'm just not just talking about lockdown. The nature of studio, of album budgets is such that for the last 20 years, almost exactly 20 years ago, I started, my recording career changed to where it was mostly remotely and less in the studio because of the cost of, let's say, flying me to Italy to go into a studio, renting the studio, flying me back, getting hotel rooms, versus sending me the file and missing the chance to be together and to discuss the piece in real time. But still, you get you're at a vastly lower cost. You get to do your album. So that's the way it's become. I know very few guys who aren't comfortable with that, and almost all of us would rather be together in real time.
Well, hopefully this year is the year that happens. Tony Levin is joining us today. Images from a Life on the Road is the new book. It's a photograph book with some very interesting and enjoyable notes to read. Many great just shows and, you know, some of the vistas. Like, you took a picture from Japan out the window. I thought it was you took a picture of a painting. How'd you work
it looked
that
like, yeah, it looked like a painting. Out the window, yeah, I wouldn't, it's true, it was out the hotel window, but a very tall hotel. I was up before dawn, and the mist was covering the area, and in Sendai was the city, I think, and it was very special, but worth actually being in the book. I probably had 1,000 pictures to go through of places I've been, and one of the great The feeling you get from what I've said earlier today is that it's kind of a drudgery traveling, but one of the great things is you get to be in different places and experience what it's really like in that place, even though essentially the 2 or 3 hours you're on stage is why you're doing it all, and that's what you're waiting for, and that's what gives animation to your world, and that's why we do it, for those few hours, not for the hours of practicing and being backstage. But sometimes the travel, you catch a break, and it's pretty exciting. And interestingly, some bands travel all the time by van, some by buses, sometimes it's flights. So one gets used to very different levels and very different manners of travel.
Tony Levin joins us today. This email came in from David. Could you please ask Mr. Levin how he felt to rejoin Liquid Tension Experiment after all these years? What is that?
Yes, that's a recent, it's a recent recording, but the album isn't released yet. It's called Liquid Tension Experiment, and I mentioned before projects that want to be bands. Well, somewhere in the spectrum, this is a project that sort of became a band. Well, it did become a band, but an interesting story because we recorded two albums in the 90s, and we toured again in 2008, and then things went quiet with us for no particular reason, and we just, with the lockdown last June, Mike Fortner, our drummer, emailed me and said, hey, what do you think about us using this summer to record an album together in real time? Because we have to write it. You can't do that remotely as a band. So we got together. There was a lot of protocols and a lot of things to worry about to have it be safe for us, but we managed to do that. We came out with quite an album that we're all proud of, and the videos have started to be released, but the actual album release will be next month. So I would call that a project that became a band.
Tony Levin joins us. Back to the phones we go. Sean is in Clifton Park. Sean, you're on.
Thanks for taking my call. Tony, I wasn't aware of the photo exhibit that you put together in the book. You mentioned a few moments ago about doing a show in the Albany, New York area at Valentine's. In the early 70s, Genesis came to the Palace Theater, and they were doing The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. Now, I've seen several shows by Genesis. By far, that was probably the most incredible show I had ever seen. Were you involved in that project with Peter?
Thanks for the question. No, I didn't even, if it was the early 70s, I didn't even know Peter yet. And amazingly, I didn't know the music of Genesis. It's ironic that I ended up playing for these 50 years with Peter. 45 years with Peter, having not known Genesis. So I met him in 76 when he had left Genesis and he was doing his first album up in Toronto. And I was asked to play bass on that. And I've been pretty much playing on his albums and touring with him ever since.
Sean, thank you.
But I did not know him in the early 70s. It's amazing that he played Albany. And I wish I had known and come up from Woodstock where I was living.
Tony Levin is our guest. Let's grab another call before our next break. And Dave is in Altamont. Dave, you're on.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for taking my call. I want to thank you for these wonderful years of challenging music. I can confidently say I've probably seen you in more bands than any other musician that I know of.
Wow.
First time I saw you was with Peter Gabriel in Oneonta in 1978, yep. I believe, in the gymnasium. But my question, and I know at times that King Crimson gets a little evasive with this question, and I'm hoping that maybe you can shed a little more light. I'm hoping that maybe someday we could expect another studio album. Your thoughts on that?
Good points, and thank you, and thanks for bringing my memory back to those days when Peter Gabriel was playing gymnasiums, which was just as much fun as playing theaters and as playing arenas. And it's not all the same. It's all different, but sometimes a small club where it's snowing and only 50 people shows up, sometimes that'll be an amazing show. So as for King Crimson, I'll shed what light, there's no secret. So I can't, I don't have much light to shed on whether the band will do a solo album. There are no plans to do a solo album. To do a studio album for King Crimson. The reason for that is we're kind of in a groove of touring a whole lot, recording those shows and just doing that to take the better part of a year off to create and record a studio album is not something Robert Fripp wants to do right now. I would predict that there won't be one forthcoming in the next few years. However, in the past, whenever I predict anything about King Crimson, I am often wrong. So I would predict, but I won't predict.
Well, you know, the live material that you have been releasing over the last 10 whatever years has been amazing. And it seems like an endless font of live gigs.
And to our credit, I think we rehearse so much for the tours and play with a lot of precision, considering that it's a large seven-piece band. That they are studio quality, even though they're done live in concert. However, you know, somebody else than Robert could have decided, hey, let's also write something new and do a studio album. But Robert doesn't want to do that right now.
You know, the last, last year, just pre-lockdown and pandemic, there was the Crimson Tour, and they were going to play Glens Falls. You were going to play Glens Falls, and the whole thing was shut down. I mean, it's hard to predict where this pandemic is going. You hope that it's winding down, and you expect that it probably is. Is there a plan now for King Crimson to hit the road again?
Yes, I would say every band has a plan right now.
Yeah.
And every plan has an asterisk, I like to put it that way.
Yep.
So King Crimson has postponed last year's tour and is planning on doing this pretty much the same tour this summer. However, I can't guarantee that that venue is part of the tour. And instead of it being June the way it was going to be in 2020, it's now going to start July. So King Crimson has dates. I don't have the dates. I think they're not confirmed, so
right.
They haven't told them to me. But it's a U.S. tour starting in July and going right into September, quite a few shows. And they'll only be publicized, I guess, when they can be confirmed. And as you can, I don't need to go into it. There are so many logistics in confirming it. And this is an English band that needs to get permission to come to the U.S. and all of that.
Well,
the immigration alone is pretty tricky.
Let's take a quick break. Tony Levin joins us today. The book is Images from a Life on the Road. You can find it at tonylevin.com. We'll talk more about the book and more about music in general with Tony Levin. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Tony Levin joins us. His new book is Images from a Life on the Road. Here's a question for you from Jacob in Cohoes. Good luck with this one, Tony Levin. As a former road manager, I have to ask, what is the worst beer you ever got for free as payment?
That's great. I won't cast my mind back to what beer there is, but as a tour manager, one of the tour managers' many difficult jobs, shepherding the band is hard enough, but then they're usually responsible for getting the payment sometimes from a club manager who's kind of holds the cash back with one hand and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And this question implies within it what that life is like. It's very tricky and very difficult.
Tony Levin joins us. Back to the phones we go. Colin and Colony. Colin, you're on.
Hi, Tony. I had a question about how difficult is it to memorize certain parts, and then how much do you remember from something that you've done maybe just as a project, like the Bozio Levin Stevens thing or Liquid Tension from back in the 90s? Like, if you had to go back and play one of those 15-minute songs from Liquid Tension, how much of it would you remember now?
That's a great question. Thanks for that question. I love that question. The short answer is, how difficult is it to remember? It gets harder as you get older. That's the short answer.
Yeah.
I was lucky, kind of blessed with a very good musical memory when I was younger. And my memory is still pretty darn good, but nothing like it was. It varies with bands. What it boils down to me is, how good are the other people's memories of it? Because mine might be pretty good, but not great. But if the other guy's is great, which is the case with Liquid Tension Experiment, they have phenomenal ability to recall everything they played and just bam, play it. So they're better than me. So I'm constantly challenged and scuffling and trying to keep up. However, with Peter Gabriel, I might have to review the pieces a little bit. I might be scuffling a little bit, but Peter has no memory of how we did it 20 years ago. So we're going to take the time for him to pick it up, so I have no worries, and it's not much of a challenge to keep up with the pace of that. With King Crimson, different, where Robert Fripp, our sort of leader, tells us way ahead of time what we're going to rehearse. We might not perform all the pieces we rehearse, but he tells us well ahead, and we all practice pretty hard and do our homework, so we all come into those, let's say, 2 weeks of rehearsing ready to play every song that he suggested that we do.
You know, you mentioned the mental aspect of this, but as you get older, and I feel this every single day, if I help painting the living room one weekend, I'm sore, I'm achy. Now, as you get a little older, do you have to do more limbering and physical exercises to sort of maintain the technical requirements of the music?
Yeah, good question. Yes. Yes, not so much the music, but the rigor of being on the road. Yeah, and I have to try do my best to stay in shape, which is a good idea anyway, I suppose. And I've been doing this for a long time, maybe since I was 50, and that would be 24 years ago. Yeah. And I realize that things are not going to be the same forever. So I try and stay in good shape. I think that's a very good question, but a little different than the. It's an interesting thing of the mental capacity that the average musician has to have to play any piece, to really, to when you think about it, to remember one piece all the way through all the notes and to be able to play them right would be a challenge for some people. And for musicians who learn 10 or 50 or 100 pieces, it takes maybe getting enough rest and certainly the training of having a mind to think that way. So all of us, if I can speak for all of us who do that, we're all pretty good at that because it's what we've been doing most of our lives, memorizing music and bringing it to the front of our mind. However, in a band like King Crimson, which is a three-hour show, maybe 20, 25 pieces instead of the usual 15, it's quite a mental challenge to get through it without having any mental slip-ups. And I can tell when we do two or three shows in a row without a day off that the number of slip-ups that happen within the band, I don't think they're to the degree that the audience notices them, but we notice them. And, you know, it's just a fact of life that the level of concentration is such that we need to be sure we're at the top of our game every night to play our show.
Robert Fripp generally sits down sort of, depending on the tour you see, it's either behind plexiglass or it's in a corner. I assume that if he wanted to, he could have crib notes aplenty and no one could see them. It would be tougher for you. Do you have any notes at all?
I do. I have a music stand set really low for just a couple of pieces that baffle me. Usually it's not because they're that difficult, but because they're very similar to other pieces. Some of them even perversely have the same name. I can't remember offhand because it's over a year since we toured. Well, a year and a half yeah. since we toured. But
well, Lark's you know, Tongue. There's about 27 Lark's Tongues, right?
Exactly. Yeah, part one, part two, part three. And they have six segments that are similar but different. So I'll just have a crypt sheet and some notes.
Yep. Tony Levin joins us today.
I try not to bury my head in the music because that would send a signal to the audience, oh, this guy hasn't learned this piece yet.
And it would also make it tougher to take photographs, which we didn't even get to the end of the Crimson shows where we're allowed to take photographs. But let's go to the phones. MC in Poughkeepsie. MC, you're on.
Hi there. I just had a little story to share. So I saw Peter Gabriel in concert with Mr. Levin on stage with him back in the 80s in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. And I was working for a newspaper at the time, and I got permission to bring my camera in and take pictures. And two rolls in, I think, I got one good picture, a little tiny bit of Peter Gabriel, and I got the only amazing photograph of you.
Wow.
And two rolls. I don't know what I did wrong, but luckily my boss at the time knew who you were. He's like, oh, we can use that. So if
That's
I'm not
funny.
Missing, I still may even have that photograph in my photo album because it was such a funny story. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it's so you're facing me, but you're looking to your right. And if I'm not mistaken, you have a drumstick in one hand? Is that possible?
That's quite possible. What year was it?
Okay. It was in the 80s, early 80s.
Yeah, so there's if it was at the beginning of the show, there were shows where Peter had the band enter through the audience playing drums, big bass drums. And if it wasn't that, then it's an even more interesting story because on the piece Big Time, recording it, I asked Jerry Marotta to play Jerry Marotta was the drummer on that piece. I asked him to play with his drumsticks on the bass strings while I fingered the left hand. So then the next year, which would have been, I'm guessing 86, we were touring, and I was trying to play that part. And the first 6 months of it, I had a drumstick in my hand for that piece. So it could have been that. Later, interestingly, Peter Gabriel saw me doing that practicing at a sound check. And then Peter said to me, why don't you find a way to put drumsticks on your fingers? And I did. I chopped off drumsticks and I kind of invented, with Peter's help and his instigation, we invented a thing called funk fingers. And ever since then, I occasionally play with two drumsticks on my fingers.
MC, thanks
a lot. That's a very long answer to a question.
No, that's a great answer. Tony Levin's our guest. The new book is Images from Life on the Road, and a lot of photos taken in mirrors in this book. Any of the guys in Crimson ever say, hey, will you get out of the dressing room for just a minute, Tony? Stop with the camera.
They're very kind about not doing that. No, they haven't. If they had said that, I would have stayed out of the dressing room. Well, we share dressing rooms, so there I am in the dressing room. But no, nobody said, get out of my face, stop doing it. And frankly, I have antenna about that. And if I get the feeling someone doesn't like it, I ease up. Can I tell you a quick story?
Sure, man. No.
Peter Gabriel, in 2016, yeah, we toured along with Sting. Wonderful tour, very special. It was Sting's band and Sting and Peter Gabriel. And from the first rehearsal together, actually Sting visited the Peter Gabriel band rehearsing. This was in London. And there I am taking pictures. Sting had a beard at the time. And I sensed really strongly he did not like it. So what I did was, just because I take pictures all the time at rehearsals, I kind of certainly eased up and I got out of his face. And I kept taking pictures of him a little bit, but not making a big thing out of it. And then as we toured, and now I'm taking pictures on stage, I just had a sense he didn't love it, but not, he could easily just said, would you not do that? And I would have stopped. And I wasn't pushing it, but I wanted the pictures of me look so great. And it's so unusual to have a picture from behind Sting, seeing him and how he relates to the audience and seeing the audience behind him. So I got some very cool pictures. And I was very pleased at the end of the tour when his management sent me an email and said that he had a single coming out. And there was a picture of him that I took that he saw on my website that he particularly wanted for the cover of the single that was released. And I said, sure, that's great.
Oh,
so I had a happy outcome.
Cha-ching. I guess that'll pay for the mortgage for the...
I believe the contract said $1, which I know from experience won't be coming.
Well, that's a shame.
That's not from him. That's the record label. That's the way they work.
Hey, that pays better
not
than
important.
Music. That's good for you. Ray
Ray in theory, a dollar.
You're on with Tony Levin. Go ahead, man.
Hi, yes. You did some work with a friend of mine, Neil Tater, who works with Will Ackerman of Wyndham Hill fame. And I'm just curious how that went and how you got involved with Will and Neil. Neil's a good friend, and I love that project.
Thank you. Great point. Neil's wonderful artist. I was pleased to play on one of his records. He makes records all the time, and he's up in the Albany area. I think I see him when I play in the area, but not too often. And Will Ackerman is a great producer. He started the record label Wyndham Hill a long time ago, and really was instrumental in bringing to the public's attention that kind of music. And even though it's kind of worlds away from King Crimson and Liquid Tension Experiment for sure, musically, I enjoy playing that kind of music. And once in a while, Will has me come up to his gorgeous studio in Vermont, Southern Vermont, and play on some very special music.
That's awesome. Thank you very much.
Ray, thank
sure.
you. And let's go quickly now to Jake in Saratoga. Jake, you're on with Tony Levin.
Hi there. I last saw you when you were at the Van Dyke about 10 years ago in Schenectady.
Yeah, I love the Van Dyke.
My question is about Kate Bush. Have you ever worked with Kate Bush? Have you ever met Kate Bush or worked with her?
Yeah, sort of, but not in a deep way. Famously sang on the Peter Gabriel track "Don't Give Up," which I played on, but I wasn't there when she sang on it. And then later she showed up for one part of a tour. At that time, I don't know how she is now, but she didn't like to leave England, so she wouldn't go on tour with Peter to guest and sing that song. But when we played England, she came. So that was actually when I met her a few years after having played the track. And I met her, and she was very nice, and saw her backstage, and kind of that was the end of my relationship.
Wow.
Okay.
Perhaps she's the greatest female artist of all time in many opinions. So, yeah.
Well, she is really great.
Thank you. You know,
I understand your emotion about it. She's really fantastic. I would have loved, as a bass player, to do more with her, but you take what you're given, and I'm very honored that I got to be on one track with her and I got to meet her.
Tony Levin is our guest today. The new book is Images from a Life on the Road, and we had an email here from Martin, and he wanted you to talk a little about the old Eastman days with Steve Gadd and Chuck Mangione and Oscar Pettiford, jazz influence, etc. But he also wants to know, and I also back this up, how's Pete doing?
Oh, my brother Pete is doing fine. My older brother Pete plays keyboard.
Yeah.
And we tour together more than ever, not this past year, but more than ever as Levin Brothers Band. We are always playing the Van Dyke up in Schenectady. And boy, we don't have time for me to go much into the East.
No, you got
year,
2 minutes.
I went there as a classical player, played in the Rochester Philharmonic a little bit, but luckily met the wonderful drummer Steve Gadd, who was in school with me, and began to play jazz. By the time I left that 4 years, I was a jazz player, having played with the Mangione brothers, wonderful opportunity. And I quickly, after that, switched from jazz to rock, where I was a bit more comfortable than the other two genres, but very lucky to meet the wonderful musicians. What a great music scene, especially for jazz, Rochester and Buffalo were in those days.
Yeah, you know, you say you don't play jazz as much, but the Levin Brothers album is still on the, not the turntable, but the CD player at my house. Did you ever make vinyl of that one?
We did. We did. It kind of bucket list. You know, you always want to make vinyl of an album you really feel good about. And that one, I said, I don't care what happens, we're making the vinyl. I'll try. There's not many left, but I'll try and put one aside from you. And maybe next time when I'm there in person, next time I'm on air, I'll bring you one for you, Brad.
That's very cool. Well, the new book is great. And I got to say one more thing. We have 1 minute here. The picture of you and Peter Gabriel with the half haircuts kills me. Explain that one in 30 seconds.
It's pretty bizarre. By the way, that's a Polaroid.
Oh, really?
I had to scan it high. Yeah, if you look carefully at the, it's a square picture. That's a Polaroid. Yeah, Peter came to my room one day. This is way back in the 70s, late 70s or early 80s. Came to my hotel room and said, I'd like to shave my head off. You're good at that. Can I use your razor or something? I forget the details. And he, being Peter, he started by shaving off half of his head. I mean, the right half of it, not front or back, but the right half of it. And there was his long hair in the sink. And I kind of whopped it on the side of my bald head.
Yeah.
And to cut the Polaroid. First of all, I had been taking pictures of him shaving his head and got some pretty good ones, but with half a head of hair. But then I got an interesting selfie, no such word in those days, with a Polaroid of the two of us.
Yeah. Well, that's a picture that is, I'm glad you put it in the book. But it's an image that I won't be able to escape for quite some time.
Hey, it's not fine art, but it had to be in there.
Hey, this book is fantastic. Tony Levin, Images from a Life on the Road. Once again, your website is what, sir?
Let me think if I remember it. TonyLevin.com.
Hey, man, thanks a lot for being here, and we will talk to you hopefully in person maybe the next time, 6 months, a year, whatever. Be good. We'll talk to you soon.
I appreciate it very much, Ray. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Support comes from ArtSpark, dedicated to helping artists, musicians, and all creatives with the business of being an artist. Arts-spark.com. And Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, working to provide a healthy and safe environment, providing education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world. Reopening 5 days a week in person, K-12. WaldorfSaratoga.org for information. Once again, thanks to Tony Levin for being here. And thank you for calling. Thank you for writing. And thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Tina Rennick took the calls. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the program, I was talking with Tony about being sore and old, which is true. I'm sore and old. And tomorrow we'll discuss physical therapy with Matt Goodemote. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for 51%.